produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in to the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Our coverage of the most important marijuana news. Today, we'll hear portions of the congressional debate yesterday on the Hinchey-Raubacher Amendment. The arguments made by the major supporters in Congress are compelling and reflect these elected officials' interactions with patients. Earlier this week, the amendment's co-sponsor, New York Congressman Maurice Hinchey, spoke with us. You can download Tuesday's show right from our archive. Today, we'll hear Congressman Dana Raubacher, also a co-sponsor of the bill, in his statements to the House of Representatives. And we'll get an analysis from Normal's counsel, Keith Strupp. Also on the program today, our Voices of Reform special with Drug War Truth's editor, Doug McVeigh. Plus some stash music from the Hempilation 2 album. And we'll wrap things up with our second weekly web poll. All here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. We've gathered up some important audio for you today. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org. Today, we're taking most of the program to focus on the Hinchey-Raubacher debate in a legislative special on the Audio Stash. We'll listen in on some of what was said on the House floor yesterday in this now annually debated amendment. First, we'll hear from the amendment's Republican co-sponsor, Dana Raubacher from California.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in strong support of the Hinchey-Raubacher Amendment. Our amendment would prohibit any funds made available in this act to the Department of Justice from being used to prevent the implementation of legally passed state laws in those 11 states authorizing the use of marijuana for medical purposes. Our coalition of freedom-minded Republicans and Democrats on this issue is based on compassion for those who are suffering, a commitment to personal liberty, and a firm belief in the principles of federalism. The use of marijuana to relieve the pain of victims of a wide variety of medical conditions is well known and increasingly documented in the media and in medical journals. For many of these people, medical science has not been able to relieve their pain. Just recently, a friend of mine and a friend of many years passed away, Lynn Nofsinger, and many of you here probably know him. He was Ronald Reagan's first press secretary. I went to see him after he got out of the hospital with his treatments for cancer. He had his good days and his bad days. I saw him about a week before he died, and I asked Lynn about it, and he said, yes, sometimes it's bad and other times it's not, but I couldn't get myself to eat, and I had this pain no matter what they did for me. And I said, well, did you ever try that medical marijuana that we've been talking about and debating about? And he got a twinkle in his eye, and he says, yes, I did, and it brought my appetite back, and I slept like a baby. Don't tell me that we should have federal law enforcement people come into a state where the people have voted to approve that if a doctor agrees, and get in the way of Lynn Nofsinger or anyone else who's suffering, and use federal money and federal resources that should be going to fight crime in order to create that obstacle. It's a travesty. Individuals who live in the 11 states affected by the amendment have been granted by their voters of these states the legal right to use marijuana to alleviate their pain if a doctor agrees. If the voters have so voted and a doctor agrees, it's a travesty for the government to intercede, the federal government, allocating our scarce resources to fighting this, getting in the way of someone using something to alleviate their suffering. This is something which should be left to the states, as American tradition dictates. Sandra Day O'Connor stated it best, and she stated that states should serve as a laboratory so that people can try some new ideas out to see how they work. Well, the federal government shouldn't get in the way of what's going on in these 11 states to see how this works. The most recent decision of the Supreme Court has thrown the ball into the hands of the U.S. Congress. Justice Paul Stevens made it clear. The voices of the voters may one day be heard in the halls of Congress on behalf of legalizing marijuana. 11 states have already acted. Here in the House, a wide coalition of Republicans, I'd ask for an additional 30 seconds. Well, I would hope you would all join us for the principles of federalism, compassion, and individual liberty, and not get in the way of people who are suffering. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from Wisconsin.
I move to strike the last word, and I yield a minute to the gentleman.
Gentleman is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you very much. We have people out there, not just Lynn Nofsinger, but others, and my mother suffered, and I remember how she lost her appetite after suffering a debilitating disease in which she had to go through treatments. This is a travesty to use scarce federal resources. Join this coalition of people who are Republicans and Democrats who believe in federalism, who believe in compassion, and believe in personal liberty. Let doctors prescribe these things, not federal government bureaucrats.
That was the amendment's co-sponsor, Dana Raubacher. Next, we'll hear from longtime medical marijuana proponent, Barney Frank of Massachusetts.
Mr. Chairman, I've never been an advocate of drug testing for members of Congress, but hearing that marijuana use can dull the brain makes me think maybe there's something that we ought to be checking into. I'm always heightened in my support of an amendment when those opposing it won't argue it directly. We're not talking about 18-year-olds getting into methamphetamine. This is a very narrow amendment. It says where a state has decided by its own democratic processes to legalize marijuana according to a doctor's prescription, we won't arrest people who try to do it federally. And very few of the arguments have met that. The question of marijuana in general isn't before us. This doesn't legalize marijuana. We have many drugs that can legally be prescribed that are far more behavior-altering, far more addictive than marijuana has ever alleged to be. This is a question about whether or not we are going to reach into medical practice and say to medical practitioners whose states would allow them to do it that because of cultural and other concerns about this drug, we ban its use when you might find it medically appropriate. This is, again, the time when I think the slogan of this House ought to be, we're not doctors, we just play them on C-SPAN.
Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey from California also spoke in favor of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Over the past months, we've all met with them. They live in our towns. They come to our offices. They come to the Hill every single year. And they come from all walks of life. They share with us their experience or the experience of someone they love, someone with epilepsy, glaucoma, cancer, AIDS, or other chronic pain. Their stories touch our lives, and if only for a moment, we feel their misery. But unless we are affected personally or know somebody who is affected, after a few hours, we inevitably get caught up in something else. Today, we can actually do something that might improve their lives. We can stop prosecuting the use of medical marijuana in the states that legally permit it. The choice to use medical marijuana, mostly made out of medical necessity and the desire to get through the day with as much normalcy and strength as possible. This is the right thing to do for those who are sick, who are in pain, and those who cannot keep a meal down. Let's not be bad politicians. Let's make smart decisions. Let's help these good people.
Also from California, Sam Farr co-sponsored the amendment. Here are his remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of the Hinchey, Roybacher, Paul Farr amendment. Every year we bring this amendment to the floor. So far it's never passed. Some may ask, well, why are we doing this again? Well, the answer is because of the statements that have been made already by Mr. Hinchey and Mr. Obey about compassion for people who are suffering. We offer this amendment for terminal cancer patients, for AIDS victims, for persons who suffer chronic pain. We offer this amendment not only to protect those people, we offer this amendment to protect those states that are progressive enough to provide alternative medical options to those who need it. So often, this body insists on protecting the rights of states to define marriage. So often, this body insists on protecting the rights of states to see abortion, set abortion policies. So often, this body insists on protecting the rights of states to determine education curriculum standards. But when it comes to protecting the rights of states to set medical scope of practice, this body balks. All of a sudden, states no longer have the right to determine what's best for their citizens when those include medical marijuana. The Hinchey Amendment doesn't change federal law. It doesn't change drug policy. It does protect states' rights. For those of you who come from states that do not have medical marijuana laws, nothing in this amendment will protect your state, will affect your state. Everything in your state remains status quo. For those of you who come from states that do have medical marijuana laws, very little in this amendment will impact your state. The only difference now is that your state will be able to implement its laws without little old ladies being busted by federal alleys, federal cops. I support this amendment.
And finally, some of the most passionate remarks came from Democratic Congressman David Obey from Wisconsin.
Mr. Chairman, I congratulate the authors of this amendment. And I simply want to say this. If I am terminally ill, it isn't anybody's business on this floor how I handle the pain or the illness that's or the sickness associated with that illness. With all due respect to all of you, butt out. I didn't enter this world with the permission of the Justice Department, and I'm certainly not going to depart it by seeking their permission or any other authority. The Congress has no business telling people that they cannot manage their illness or their pain any way they need to. I would trust any doctor in the country before I trust some of the Daffy Ducks in this institution to decide what I'm supposed to do if I'm terminally ill. The idea that somehow this is a gateway that we're creating for a drug like meth is a joke. I detest meth. I've seen what it does. It is a plague on my district. It's especially horrendous in the Midwest, and it's getting worse every day. That has nothing whatsoever to do with the management of pain and misery for people who are sick and who are dying. When is this Congress going to recognize that individuals in their private lives have a right to manage their problems as they see fit, without the permission of the big guy in the White House or the big guy in the Justice Department or any of the Lilliputians on this congressional floor? Wake up.
That was Congressman David Obey of Wisconsin on the House floor yesterday in his remarks in favor of the Hinchey-Raubacher Amendment. Now let's go to Keith Strump from Normal with a wrap-up of the vote. Keith, thanks for joining us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash again today.
Happy to be with you.
At first, do you think that this amendment will be back next year?
Oh, I think without question. As long as they hold us back, we'll keep coming back every year with a little more support. And if you notice, the principal sponsor, Maurice Hinchey from New York, issued a statement just after the vote saying that he was disappointed in the outcome, but he was certainly emboldened and would be back next year. So absolutely, this issue's not going away.
Now, Keith, tell us about your impressions of the debate.
It seemed to me that our side did a reasonably effective job. I mean, it's easy to be critical when you're sitting watching it on your computer screen or on your television screen, and, of course, they're standing up making a live statement on the floor of the House. But frankly, I thought most of the advocates for this amendment did an effective job this year. I was particularly impressed that several of them focused on the victims. I thought that probably most moving in my mind was when Dana Rohrabacher from California talked about his good friend Lynn Nofsinger. Lynn was a very highly respected Republican consultant in the city who had been close to former President Reagan and other Republicans and highly respected by many of the people who voted against this. Yet Lynn himself We didn't know this, but it turns out that Lynn himself had used medical marijuana during his illness before he died, and we were aware prior to this that Lynn supported medical use. He appeared with us a couple of years ago on Capitol Hill to try to build support for this because his daughter, who had died an untimely death but found marijuana helpful when she was getting near death as well. So I thought that was terribly moving testimony. I also thought David Obey was awfully passionate. I think Maurice Hinchey does a good job. He's very articulate and understands this and clearly connects with it. So I was pleased overall. I thought our side used the few minutes. I think they only had maybe a total of 12 or 15 minutes to divide up, but I thought they used it quite effectively.
And why are these big marijuana debates so contentious in Congress?
Well, what I think was evident yesterday, and some people who were not as accustomed to the Washington culture might have been a little surprised, but the drug law reform issue is more difficult to move than almost any other issue. I mean, keep in mind, we had some supporters this year from the business community who were supporting it, not at all interested in drug policy, but interested in stopping the wasteful spending of government. That's a crowd that generally gets their way, or at least has a major influence when they weigh in on Capitol Hill. They've now been with us for 2 years, and they keep getting stronger every year. And despite that additional support, we only picked up two additional votes this year over what we had last year. And again, I think what that reminds us all is that this is an incredibly difficult issue to deal with elected officials. I'm sorry it's that way, but it's been that way for a long time. I think it's sometimes people who are from other parts of the, people who are from other parts of the country may have this image of Congress in that you can come in and you can talk some common sense to these people and make a difference. That's the old movies. Jimmy Stewart goes to Washington, I think, on one of those movies. That's a lovely romantic version of what Congress is like, but I'm afraid it doesn't reflect reality very much. There are some issues, and drug policy and drug use issues certainly are at the top of that list, that many elected officials just cannot seem to deal with in a rational manner. And what we heard yesterday from our opponents, in general, had nothing to do with the amendment that was being offered. Rather, they were referring to sending a wrong message to kids and claiming marijuana had no medical value, et cetera. You know, even if you felt that marijuana had no medical value, I would hate to think that a member of Congress would be so out of touch that they still held that view, but I'm sure some of them do. Regardless, there's a long history of the states controlling the practice of medicine, not the federal government. And most of these Republicans who voted against this, you will hear them day in and day out arguing for states' rights on other issues. But when it comes to marijuana and marijuana policy, you notice they don't mind bending their principles. So it's disappointing, not surprising, but it is disappointing to see that year after year. But I don't think we should get discouraged. I think it just means we have to work harder, we have to redouble our efforts, and I'm convinced that over the next few years we're going to win this issue. It may be that some of these old-timers have to retire and be replaced by younger people, but if necessary, we'll outlive our opponents, and we are going to win this issue in the next few years.
Now, it may not be Jimmy Stewart from the movies, but how important are those patients who come to Washington to lobby their congressional reps?
You know, I honestly believe the more effective strategy is to use patients more and more. No doubt about that. This is an issue that patients can articulate more effectively than the rest of us can because it's personal with them. But I think what we need to do is be arranging for those patients to visit their members of Congress when they're home in the home district. Frankly, they have a lot more time when they're home. They have time to, you could sit down and visit for 30 or 40 minutes with your member of Congress when they're in recess at home. Whereas when you come to Washington, you're lucky if you get 10 minutes with an aide. You may shake the hand of the congressman or congresswoman, but frankly, a lot of times, you don't even get to see them. It's much easier to see them and to get their attention when they're not distracted by other bills and other things happening in Congress. It's much easier when they're at home. But yes, I think the principle of relying on patients to make their own case for this amendment is a very powerful one. Just keep in mind that we have supported over the years at least, I guess it's two different, what were called sometimes Journeys for Justice, and sometimes they had other names like this, where we brought in as many as 30 or 35 seriously ill patients, many of them in wheelchairs. We hired buses and we took them over to the Capitol and we spent two or three days lobbying members of Congress. I think that's terribly powerful, but again, I think it's more powerful if we do it in their home district.
Well, Keith, thanks for that breakdown, and we look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Oh, nice to be with you. Thanks.
We have links to the House roll call on our website, normalaudiostash.com. And get involved, folks. There is simply no better way to help marijuana law reform in this country than to be in constant contact with your congressional representative via mail, email, or phone. We've got links to Normal's Take Action section right up on normalaudiostash.com. Visit that page and find out just how easy it is to be a digital activist these days. Now let's listen in to our Voices of Reform special with Doug McVeigh. Voices of Reform, a Normal News special from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Each week, we'll be presenting special podcasts with portions of audio recorded at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. The complete speeches and more Normal audio is available at norml.org/podcast. This week, we'll hear from Doug McVeigh, editor of Drug War Facts, Common Sense for Drug Policy, and co-founder of the Cannabis Action Network. Doug creates media and publications based on hard data that serve everyone in the marijuana law reform movement.
I'm here today to tell you the truth about truthiness. It's true. As David said, I have the honor of being the director. I'm short. Sorry. As David said, I have the honor of being the director of research for Common Sense for Drug Policy and the editor of Drug War Facts. In that capacity, I constantly review research and data on drug control policies in order to help reformers, media, the general public make sense of what's often a confusing debate. Now, it's confusing because drug warriors intentionally make it that way. Public confusion perpetuates the status quo. This administration, of course, uses that tactic quite a lot in more than just the drug war, though I'm going to stick with that aspect of it, which is probably why the American Dialect Society chose truthiness as its word of the year for 2005. For those of you who don't know, truthiness is defined as the quality of stating concepts or facts one wishes or believes to be true rather than concepts or facts known to be true. And now I ask you, has there ever been a better word for describing the propaganda that props up prohibition? See, the drug war is built on a foundation of lies, from the contention that medical marijuana is a fraud to the notion that law enforcement works ad nauseum. It's our responsibility to call them out on this. And if I can do any help in terms of providing the information to let you do it, well, then my job is being done. Now, mind you, these aren't always outright lies. Facts in any debate are nuanced. Things are rarely simply black and white. One example of this, drug warriors frequently refer to the number of the increasingly large numbers of marijuana users who are getting referred to drug treatment, and which is true. But if you look at the data, it reveals that the bulk of these are because of, well, people are trying to avoid hassles with law enforcement. Basically, they're being ordered to because their alternative is going to jail. And you know, meanwhile, people who need help, people who actually want to have help with their problems don't come forward. And why? Because they're afraid of admitting that they break the law. And, you know, if they could find affordable treatment in the first place. So you see, if we're concerned about addiction, then we have to legalize drugs. No, thank you. See, by peeling away the layers of distortion and wishful thinking which obscure the facts, we can finally reach the core of the debate, and by doing that, we will win. You see, at Common Sense, we believe that an informed public will inevitably demand rational drug policies. We're really optimistic. But, you know, on the other hand, if we didn't have hope, if we didn't believe, then we couldn't do this. CSDB provides a number of resources to carry out this educational mission, many of them on the web. Our sites are constantly expanding as new items are added, new subjects are covered. They're really useful tools. Please do check them out. Our most popular is the eponymous website, csdp.org. Through it, we provide current news and information on a lot of topics with links to source articles, other organizations, all that kind of stuff. We try to go past the headlines to find the whole story. I've finally started providing an RSS feed, too, for those of you who are using newsreaders, so you can, it's a lot easier to keep up to date with things that are happening. All that's on our website. We also run a public service advertising campaign. Our website has a full set of those ads in the last 7 years, and there are also copies of those ads at the registration desk. Now, these PSAs run in selected major opinion and political commentary periodicals, including Reason, which is not why I'm on this panel today. And the check's in the mail. Our flagship website, of course, is drugwarfacts.org. Drug War Facts is an archive of research and data on drug control policies, and he said it, but modestly speaking, it is an essential resource for anyone who's interested in drug control policy or in drugs. The new print edition is going to be done in a few weeks. I'm sorry that it's not here. It's at the printers. I have the final approval, which is going out. It'll be printed soon. Get in touch with us. On the other hand, use the web version. It's available in HTML. It's in PDF. It's in plain text. It's updated regularly, and it's free. And if, for those of you browsing the web on your PDAs, we're going to have a version in wireless markup language soon. I just have to get the manual and learn it. I like doing that. It's fun. I'm a geek. Now, one of our lesser-known sites is Drug War Distortions, drugwardistortions.org. And this is actually the site I enjoy the most. In Drug War Distortions, what we do is we deconstruct, debunk, or at least explain some of these nuanced arguments, including questions about drug use estimates and the gateway theory and cannabis and drug treatment. And I recently added a section to Drug War Distortions, which deals with the assertion that marijuana use contributes to violent behavior. You heard that right. ONDCP says that, quote, research shows that kids who use marijuana weekly are nearly four times more likely than non-users to report they engage in violent behavior, end quote. And to back up their assertion, the czar's office quotes two studies. The first, from the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA, actually does show that young people who admit on federal surveys that they are frequent marijuana users also admit to engaging in other problem behaviors. The researcher at least was honest enough to admit that there's no evidence of causality in any direction. ONDCP kind of left that part out. The second study was published in the Journal of Addictive Diseases, and that study did find some correlation between admitted marijuana use and some violent behaviors. The researchers, however, noted the people studied, all of whom were drug users from the inner city who are African Americans of lower socioeconomic status, that these people were not representative of the population as a whole, weren't even representative of a typical inner city, lower SES African-American community. They also noted that the marijuana use could have been an attempt to, you know, control violent tendencies. That is, it was probably self-medication. But again, that doesn't fit into ONDCP's worldview. And so truthiness, once again, rears its ugly head. Now, with a little bit of research, we find the real truth. I'm going to keep within time. So, in closing, there are a lot of resources out there. The important things are to question, to learn, and to respond. Never, ever accept arguments at face value, not even mine. Always look for proof. The real truth, you know, like they say, really is out there. Thank you all very much. Have a terrific conference.
That was Doug McVeigh, editor of Drug War Facts and co-founder of the Cannabis Action Network at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. His complete talk during the Reefer Rhetoric and Retorts panel is available on our Normal Events podcast. Visit norml.org/podcast. right, folks, in our weekly web poll today, and thanks to everybody who voted on our first web poll this week. We asked on Tuesday, do you enjoy the smell of pot smoke? And it's surprising the answers are out there. They do have odorless strains now. So far, we've gotten 44 votes for yes, you do enjoy the smell, and just 9 votes saying no, you don't enjoy the smell. You can keep voting on that on our Tuesday page. And today, we're asking you, in line with everything going on the show today here, have you ever contacted your congressional representative? Have you ever been in contact with your rep? You should be out there, folks. It's very easy to do it. Again, visit the Take Action section of Normal's website to find out more. But have you ever contacted your congressional representative via phone or email or regular mail? Let us know if you're active out there. Vote in our poll today. If you haven't contacted your rep, get active and vote in our poll today at least. Go to our website at normalaudiostash.com. And again, thanks to everybody who's been sending in your votes. Tune in tomorrow, Friday, and find out who the free stuff winner was this week. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Alan St. Pierre, Keith Strupp, and Doug McVeigh for contributions to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.